Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McCallum. Ed Lucas is a famous blind sports reporter, broadcaster, and motivational speaker. He is distinguished for his many years of covering national baseball playoffs, World Series, and All-Star games as a reporter for the New York Yankees and Mets. Lucas has interviewed hundreds of acclaimed baseball figures, politicians, and celebrities. Ed Lucas earned honors for his work, including an Emmy for the Ed Lucas Show web-based program. As a motivational speaker, he has presented to audiences of thousands on life's challenges and how he conquered the challenges of blindness to succeed in the sports reporting business. Ed's taking a break from his duties to come to Speaking Out for the Blind to share his life story and maybe inspire you to be a future sports reporter. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
Very good, sir.
I'm doing good here, too. So, we're going to talk more about your reporting accomplishments in just a few minutes here. But I'd first like to jump back in time a little bit and just talk about that moment when you became blind. I was watching a report about you on NBC's The Today Show, and I learned that you and your dad were watching the first ever nationally televised baseball game between the New York, who's now the world champion San Francisco Giants, and the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1951. I believe that you were about 11, and once the Giants won, you went into the backyard to play baseball to celebrate their big win. A few minutes into the game, you were pitching, and a line drive came back and hit you in the head. This detached your retinas, of which, at the time, there was no medical or surgical care to reattach them. What emotions were running through your mind once you learned that your retinas couldn't be reattached and that you were going to stay blind for the rest of your life?
I came home from school, and we were watching it on a 12-inch TV, the playoff game, the third playoff game between the Giants and Dodgers, who hated each other in New York. If you're old enough to remember the rivalry, it was a greatest rivalry in baseball, even better than the Red Sox-Yankees today. But Don Newcomb was pitching for the Dodgers, and the Giants got a few men on. And actually, Don Mueller slid into third base after a double from Whitey Lackman. Clint Hartung had a run for him. And then Bobby Thompson came up, and they brought Ralph Branca in, who 2 days prior, Thompson hit a home run off of. And the first pitch was a high inside fastball. The next pitch, Thompson launched into the left field seat in the polo grounds, which wasn't that far. And, of course, they went crazy, and they carried Leo DeRocha on his shoulder, who was the manager of the New York Giants at the time. And I was so excited, I grabbed my baseball glove and I went outside. We got a bunch of guys to play ball. And in the projects, we played in what they called a skating ring. It was pavement. And I was a left-handed pitcher. I took my glasses off because I always felt I could see better without them. And I threw a pitch, and a line drive came back and hit me in the head. And at first, all I saw was different colors and different stars. And for weeks, they weren't sure what they were going to do. And I thought it was the end of the world. My only image of a blind person was someone standing on the corner with a tin cup and a cane begging. And I vowed I would never, never, never do that. I loved the game of baseball, and I wanted to do something in baseball. I became very, very depressed. Doctors didn't want me to go to school for that half a year, and I was just at home. I would stay in my room and really not do anything, and very depressed. And my mother, unbeknownst to me, wrote a letter to Leo DeRocha, the manager of the Giants, who won the pennant in 1951, or the Dodgers. He wrote a letter back, which she was very surprised. She just wrote to him and asked if he could send an autographed baseball, an autographed photo of one of the players to try to lift my spirits. And he wrote back and said, "You bring Ed over to the polo grounds next season, 1952, and pick out a date and just come and bring him a few hours before and bring him to the polo grounds so we can meet him and have someone bring him into the clubhouse. In those days, center field had a large porch on it, and that's where the clubhouse was. And my mother sat out on the porch in the polo grounds because no women were allowed in the clubhouse at that time. And I went into the clubhouse with an attendant, and he walked me into DeRosa's office, and I sat in his swivel chair. And DeRosa came in, introduced himself, and I was thrilled just to meet him. And I said to him, "Mr. DeRosa, will I be meeting some of the players going out on the field?" And he said, "No, sir." My heart dropped. I thought it was the end of the world. He said, "You're my guest. And if they want to meet you, they have to come in here, each and every one of them. And if they don't, they'll hear from me." So as they came off the field after batting practice, they marched in. Most of them had bottles of soda to give me. I don't think DeRosa ever had so many bottles of soda on the desk as he did that day. And I started to ask questions, and like an interview. I thought it was great. I met my heroes from Jersey City, Sal Evers, who was a catcher, Don Mueller, the outfielder, Bobby Thompson, Monty Irvin, and all these guys I was talking to and asking them baseball questions. And Sal Magri, who was known as the Barber, the great pitcher for the Giants, and Wes Westrum, the catcher. So it was a great, great day. Actually, it was the greatest day of my young life. And then, as the game started, I had to leave the clubhouse, and we went out, met my mother, and we went to the game. They played the St. Louis Cardinals. It was June 14th, 1952. That lifted my spirits. But prior to that, in November of 1951, my mother read in the paper that Phil Rizzuto was going to be at American Shops. It was a clothing store in Newark, New Jersey. And many of the ball players did that during the off season. They had to work. Yogi Berra worked there. Ralph Branca worked there. And many of the ball players. My mother must have said something to him about my spirits and what happened. And he took an interest in me right away. From that day to the day he died, he was my closest friend in life. He went out of his way all the time to encourage me and to help me. And he encouraged me to complete my high school education and go on to college.
Hey, that's a great long answer, because you went to college and you went to Seton Hall University and you majored in communication.
Yes, I did. I majored in communications, and because while in high school, I started a club called the Diamond Dusters, and I brought major league ball players because I got to know them through Phil Rizzuto and people on the Giants. When I would go to the ball games, I knew Bobby Thompson then. I got to know him and Whitey Lockman. And then with Rizzuto, I got to meet Yogi and some other ball players, DiMaggio, Manu. So I started this club called the Diamond Dusters, and I would invite ball players up to visit and talk to the blind, visually impaired students at the New York Institute for the Education of the Blind in Pelham Parkway, New York, Bronx, New York. And they came. The first one I ever invited was Lindy McDaniel, who pitched as a bonus baby for the St. Louis Cardinals. I invited Alvin Dock, who played for the Giants and was traded to the Cardinals. I wrote him a letter, and he wrote back and said that he'd be happy to come. Just call me at the hotel. And I did. And he said he had a dental appointment and couldn't make it. "Why don't you call Wally Moon?" And by mistake, the operator put me into Lindy McDaniel's room. And I told him what I wanted. He said, "Would you mind if I came? I'd be happy to help you out." And I told him how to get up to the institute by train, but he took a cab. And he spent a couple hours. From that time, I wrote to Jackie Robinson, and he was working for Chock Full of Nuts after retiring in 1956, being traded to the New York Giants, and that was his greatest rival, and he said he would never play for the Giants. And he came up in 1957, and of course, Phil Rizzuto came, Gil McDougall, Mickey Mantle, so many others came to visit and speak to the fine students. They would talk about baseball, but they would talk about overcoming things and being able to do things and don't give up. And how Rizzuto said it was challenging for him. He said, I was told they couldn't play baseball by Casey Stengel. Casey Stengel said, go out and get yourself a shoeshine box and make a living that way. You're too small. You'll never make it in baseball. So Rizzuto always encouraged any place he went. And from that, I wanted to go into communications. And I got accepted at a couple of schools, and I chose Seton Hall. Went and trained with the senior eye dog, and I traveled back and forth to Seton Hall every day, 3 buses each way. But I loved it, and of course, having a connection with the Yankees, Jackie Farrell, who was the publicist for the Yankees at the time, and the head of the Speakers Bureau, he would allow me to come in. All I had to do was call Jackie and say, I'm coming over today. And he would have me talk to these guys. And so it was something that helped me, and he encouraged me. And of course, Rizzuto encouraged me not to give up.
And so you got your communications degree. Now, what were some of your first coveted jobs in the business? Tell us about those.
Well, that's interesting because we had a career day at Seton Hall. And I went to about 4 or 5 or 6 different companies. And they were very nice, but they didn't want any one person to participate. And I became very bitter at the fact that everybody was turning me down. They couldn't give me a real reason, but they skirted around it, and I knew what it was. I could feel it. And the last one, I just let out a scream. And I told them how I felt. It was like the end of the day. And I walked out, and somebody grabbed me by my arm. And I said, excuse me, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, who are you? He said, my name is Freddie Keefe. I'm with the Provident Mutual Life Insurance Company of Philadelphia. He said, I'd like to talk to you for a minute. I said, about what? He said, would you like to sell some life insurance? I said, I studied communication. Why would I want to study or work in life insurance? He said, well, I see you have a seeing eye dog here. I said, yes. He said, and you know the name Morris Frank? I said, I know the name Morris Frank, but I never met him. He was the gentleman that started the seeing eye. I said, and he's doing well from what I understand. He said, yes, he is. He works for us. He sells insurance. I said, give him a call. So I gave him a call, and Morris gave me the lowdown, saying, hey, it's not going to be easy. And so I went and I studied and received my license for selling life, accident, and health. In the meantime, I tried to get on some radio stations and wrote to them. And, well, how can a blind person do this? I had to prove to them. They wouldn't give me a job, but they said, send me a tape. And some newspapers said, you know, write something for us. Let's see. So I had to prove myself. And for many, many years, I did it for nothing because I wanted to be in the business. And I didn't get much help from my peers, the writers. They were terrible. Most of these guys were real, real miserable. And they gave me the business. I called it an Irish whisper. They would say, who is this blind guy? Why is he hanging around in the clubhouse, taking up room, taking up 2 seats up in the press box? Because I always would have a guide with me. And so they would always make these comments. And, what does he know? He can't see it. He don't know what's going on. And finally, I went to Rizzuto, who was broadcasting at that time. He had retired in 1956. And I said, Scooter, I don't know if I can take this. What do you mean you can't take it? He said, listen, you graduated Seton Hall. You received a degree in communications. You're going to do it. Don't listen to these naysayers. He said, I was told that I was too small and I could never play baseball. And I didn't listen to them. And you're not going to listen to them. He said, you just go on and do what you have to do. And eventually, I got a job where I was being paid. from the Hudson Reporter, I mean the Hudson Dispatch in Hudson County, New Jersey. Then later on, I worked for a couple radio stations, WJLK and WOBM in New Jersey, and I'm writing articles now for the Jersey Journal, and I co-write some articles with an author friend of mine who lives up in Glen Falls, New York, and he can't get down here too often. So I do some interviews, and we collaborate on stories and send it to Sports Collectors Digest.
Cool. So who have been some of the biggest baseball figures you've interviewed? Tell us briefly and about your experiences interviewing them.
Well, Joe DiMaggio, I mean, that's a big name. I mean, my first interview, of course, was Scooter. But Joe DiMaggio, always a present guy, very nice to me. And I remember asking Mr. DiMaggio, with the salaries that they're giving out today, how much do you think you would make if you were playing today? He put his hand on my shoulder and he said, Ed, I would just go up to Mr. Steinbrenner and say, how you doing, partner? Spoke to many others, Willie Mays many times, Mickey Mantle.
Oh, yeah.
Hank Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Bonds. Stan Musial. Ted Williams.
And I also understand you've interviewed some celebrities and political figures. For instance,
I've had the honor of knowing Mr. Giuliani.
Oh, yes, that's what I was going to say. Mr. Rudy Giuliani.
Who was the former mayor of New York. some other mayors of New York, as well as Dinkins, and some of the governors of New Jersey, Brendan Byrne, and Corzine, Lautenberg, Senator Lautenberg. So all these people have become friends of mine, and through interviewing them and getting to know them. And so it's been a wonderful experience and meeting many celebrities.
I hear what's even more awesome is that you're working for the well-known Yes Network on your own web-based show, The Ed Lucas Show. That's the regional sports network like Comcast Sportsnet, for instance, that's the most watched in America, and it's known as the Yankees Entertainment and Sports Cable TV Network.
Yes,
so you've interviewed...
YesNetwork.com.
Okay.
And it's all according to who comes in that I want to interview, either on the visiting team or the home team. Sometimes we go on the road mainly to Philadelphia or City Field for the Mets when the Yankees are playing them, and I'll do some interviews. So people can go in the archives and look for Ed Lucas. I mean, right now I haven't done during the off season, but you can go into the archives and hear some interviews with Reggie Jackson, who's a very, very dear friend and a wonderful person. Susan Wallman, who's the announcer for the New York Yankees. She's a colored person on the radio. She gives all the colored interviews and reports. She's a great reporter. And she talked about how she overcame cancer and how Mr. Steinbrenner helped her. And there are so many other interviews on there for about 3 or 4 years that you can check out different people, and it's been a wonderful experience. I will be doing some more this year.
Speaking of the Yes Network, you had your the wedding of your second wife Allison actually taped for that network, I understand. Tell me about that wedding.
Well, Phil Rizzuto introduced Allison and myself, and of course she's visually impaired. She has partial sight, and she studied at Seton Hall University Nursing School and lost her sight one morning waking up. She was a premature baby, as I was, and of course, getting hit in the eye, that what caused the blindness for me through the prematurity, we guys. And then Allison woke up one morning at the age of 30 in partial sight. They found out she had detached retinas. So she had to have buckles put in, which they never heard of when I was a youngster. And she has partial sight. She couldn't work as a nurse anymore. So she worked in a forest with a ranch. And up until a couple of years ago, with the economy the way it was, she no longer works. But we met and we talked on the phone for many, many years because of the state of New Jersey wouldn't give either one of us a driver's license. So we couldn't get to see each other that often. But finally we did, and I asked her if she'd like to get married, and she's a big sports fan. She's a real big baseball fan and knows as much about it as I do. And so she said yes to getting married. I said, would you like to get married at Yankee Stadium at home plate? She said, could we? I said, well, I'll make a request. And I called up and I made a request and I got a phone call back saying, Ed, Mr. Steinbrenner wants you to talk to Gina, who's in charge of off-season activities. And I spoke to her and she said, you have to come over here. She said, because I asked Mr. Steinbrenner, is this true, the memo you sent me about somebody getting married at home plate? No one had ever been married at home plate in the old Yankee Stadium before. He wouldn't allow it. I didn't know that. And we went over there and she said, he wants you to be the first because you're part of our family. And on March 10th, this coming Sunday, it will be 7 years that the we were married, and it was a great day. It was a beautiful day, 74 degrees. He had the field. He brought in the grounds crew to make the field look as if it was opening day with the lines and the bases. And he had the scoreboard with the congratulations to Alice and Ed on their special day. We had a friend of mine who was a member of the Phantom of the Opera, and he sang at home plate, and we had our wedding party at home plate, of course, and all the other guests were from one dugout to the other, round the grass. They weren't on the grass, but round the track of the home plate from first base to third base, where everybody could watch it. And then upstairs in the Yankee room, we had our reception, and I got a call that morning from Rick Cerrone, who was then the, not the ball player, but the meeting relations director, saying that Mr. Steinbrenner said, Ed, you can't be there. It was on a Friday, but he's down here in spring training, but he wanted me to call you and let you know that the check you gave us, you're going to get back. So what do you mean? So what happened? Right away, I thought, oh, my goodness, check bounce? And he said, no, he doesn't want you to pay for anything. He is paying for the entire wedding. He had the people go into the players' parking lot and had attendants there so they could park their cars. And then out on the field, they said he had everybody there. They had the wired for the singer and the microphone and the scoreboard, people worked the scoreboard, they were working there. Then he had attendants all over the ballpark and, of course, the reception up in the Yankee room. So it's a day we will never forget and always be grateful to Mr. Steinbrenner. He was wonderful to me through the years from when he first came, and we were very pleased.
Okay, so, Ed, so real quickly, how do you do your interview work? How do you hold the microphone? How do you make sure you're standing in front of the camera? Just briefly, in a nutshell, how do you do that stuff?
People from the YesNetwork.com tell me which way to look, or we set it up beforehand. Once I'm set up and he said, okay, look a little bit to your left or look straight ahead or whatever it may be. Or sometimes these guys are much taller than I am and I have to put that microphone up a little higher. And that's how we do it as far as that's concerned. And then, of course, when I'm doing my radio interviews or interviews to do a story for the Jersey Journal just on tape, I'll have my tape recorder and a microphone in front of them and ask them the questions.
Cool. So where can we see all of your work, see more information about you, see everything about Ed Lucas?
Well, you can Google me, Ed Lucas. YouTube, I have quite a few interviews on YouTube through the years. We put them on there once in a while. So if you go on YouTube, there's a few Ed Lucas, but Ed Lucas, the interviewer, and you'll see me interviewing some people, you know, baseball players, and Giuliani, as you said, and other people, announcers, and so that's, and then of course, just Google me, and other things will come up about me, and of course, I have a Wikipedia.
Don't you also have a website?
My website, www.edlucasonline.com.
Okay, well, Ed, you may indeed inspire our listeners to become the next reporter and follow in your footsteps, interviewing the greatest sports legends of our time. Thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much.
That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
You're listening to American Council for the Blind Radio.
By the blind, for the world.